I have an SUV. It's a Mazda CX-9. And I've had it for a while now. It's a good car. I like Mazdas. We have two Mazdas. And they've been good for us. They've lasted. But last year, my SUV started to act up. And I was driving on the highway. And all of a sudden, I noticed that the temperature gauge started to get into that red. And I said, I don't think it's supposed to do that. I mean, I'm not a car guy, you know. But when I started to smell something that was on fire, I thought, something's wrong. So anyway, I drove it for a few more days. And then all the lights came on, you know. And it started being kind of weird, you know. And so I Flintstoned it to a place, Harris Automotive in Wentzville. Shout out to them. And I said, hey, it's not working. Can you do something about that? And they looked at it and they said, you blew a head gasket. And I said, my wife tells me that every day. And I'm like, oh, the car. Okay, cool. And they're like, yeah, we can't work on this. You're going to have to take it to the dealership. And so anyway, got it towed to the dealership and stuff. And they looked at it and they're like, yeah, you blew a head gasket. And I'm like, well, I just paid the thing off like 3 months before. So no car payments. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, how much is it going to cost to fix it? I won't tell you how much it costs to fix it. It costs more than two children put together. That's how much it costs. And so anyway, but I paid it. I'm like, I want to keep this car. It's a good car. And they told me, they're like, this car's got a lot more miles on it. You got a lot more driving to do in this car. I said, all right, well, let's fix it. So anyway, we fixed it. It was like 3 weeks to fix it. Got the car back. Here we go. Everything's good, right? Well, then I start driving the car, and this car can go like 5,000 miles before it needs an oil change. And I've never had any kind of light come on. Anyway, every like 1,500 miles, the low oil light comes on. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Like, what does that light look like? I don't even know what that thing is. Is that gas? That's not gas. That's something else. So anyway, I take it back. And it keeps needing oil. And so I take it back to the dealership. And I'm going, hey, man, I don't know what's going on with this thing. But this light keeps coming on. And there's something about the dipstick. Supposed to have oil on it. And doesn't have any on it. I don't know what's going on. And they said, well, dipstick, you need oil. And I said, well, okay. Well, you know, to help me out here. And so they're like, all right, well, we're going to do an oil consumption test. Which I don't know if you've ever dealt with a dealership and this oil consumption test. They have to do it like four times, okay? And so we do this whole dance where I drive my car, the light comes on, I take it in. I drive my car, the light comes on, I take it in. And, it's pretty simple. After four times, they're like, yeah, you don't have any oil in your car. No duh. And, you know, I noticed that with the light coming on. But we do this back and forth and back and forth. And I go to them, I'm like, hey, I didn't do this before the whole head gasket incident. Like, did you guys leave like a unicorn in there or something that's like eating up all the oil? And they're like, nah, I don't know what it is. So anyway, I start arguing with them that they need to fix the problem and blah, blah, blah. I end up, after a couple months, I ended up on the phone with the head engineer for the state of Missouri over Mazda. And we start to problem solve and start to talk about it and what's causing this and stuff. And we run a couple tests. And anyway, it got a little bit better, but it was just really, really frustrating. And I was just kind of, every time I got in my car, there were dinging and lights, and I was just really, really frustrated into stuff. Well, then, shortly after that, just a couple months ago, as we kind of like start to find a little bit of peace in my life, my car won't start. Like, I go to hit the ignition, and it takes like four times, you know? So I'm hitting the brake, and I got the little ignition button, and it's just making like a little dumb noise, and it takes like five times. And I don't know about you guys. My dad did this, and I told myself I would never be like my dad. Guys, you ever, when the car is not starting properly, you need everything to be quiet? You know what I'm talking about? And I got two kids. I got a 10-year-old and 7-year-old that don't shut up. And so every time we get in the car, I go, hey, everybody be quiet. Everybody be quiet. And Livy even got used to it. Livy goes, shh, be quiet. Dad needs his silence to start the car. And so we get in the car and, and about the third or fourth time, here goes, it turns on. So I call him. I call Mazda again. I go, hey, I got to take this car, and I don't know what's going on. It's not starting unless I hold my tongue right and everything's silent. You know what I mean? So you guys got to fix this again. So anyway, I get an appointment July 1st to take my car in. 2 days before, on a Saturday, I go work out and I go to Sam's and I buy all of this water that you people consume. Enjoy it. All right. Anyway, So I go to Sam's and I, you know, fill my back of my SUV with water. And I also bought myself some groceries. And so I bought one of those big packs of chicken with like 10 chicken breasts in it. I bought like one of those big packs of Sam's Club beef, like 4 pounds of beef. And anyway, the back of the car was so full with water, I didn't have anywhere to put it. So I put it in the floorboard behind my driver's seat. And so I go home and 2 days later, I get up in the morning and I got to go take my car into the Mazda dealership. And it's been 100 degrees for 2 days. And I open up the car and I go, oh, oh, oh. And I'm like, what? I'm like, did the kids poop in here? Like, what's, like, what? I don't know. I'm thinking there's a dead body. I don't know what it is. And then sure enough, I opened the door for Braden to get in, and guess what's still sitting there? 4 pounds of beef, 10 chicken breasts, just been cooking in the sun and 100 degrees. Great. And I got to go. I got to get to my appointment. And the kids are with me too. And so I put the kids in, and my kids are so mad. They're so mad. I roll the windows down. And I'm like, maybe it'll air out, you know? Let me tell you something. No, no. If you're wondering, will it air out? Let me help you. No, it won't. Okay, so I drive all the way to St. Peter's down the highway with the windows down. My kids are like, you know. And I get there. I get there, and the Mazda has this like little carport, and you hand somebody your keys, and you go inside, and there's this big glass wall. And so I pull up, and there's this sweet, sweet, sweet little 19-year-old girl. And I get out of the car, and the kids have jumped out of the car by now. They are out. They went out the window, okay? And this little sweet, innocent girl, she goes, can I have your keys? And I said, they're in the car. They're in there. And I walked in the door, and it's a big glass door. You can see everything. I go, and I go to the desk, but I'm watching her. And I'm praying for her, okay? And she's so sweet. She gets in the car. She has a big smile on her face. It's the beginning of the day, right? This is maybe like her first car. And she gets in the car and she starts to dry heave. And she goes, wah, wah. And then I see it and I have a gag reflex. And so I'm inside and I'm going, wah, wah. And then somebody else sees me and they start to gag and they start to do it. And so she's in the car going, bleh, and I'm in the side going, bleh, and there's somebody behind the desk going, what, bleh, chain reaction. Chain reaction, okay? She opened the door. She drove my car away with the door open like this. Trying to breathe. I have it. It's outside. And it still smells. Ashley and I had to go to an appointment last week. And she's like, do you want to take your car or mine? And I said, I said, I'll drive because I'm boss. But I have to warn you. And I told her what happened. And I had sprayed some stuff. And it's still. And she got in the car. And I just looked at her and I said, is it okay? And she goes, I don't want to work for you anymore. And I said, okay. All right. But life happens like that, right? I mean, this has been like a year struggle. And like, man, it's just, I found something to spray in it so much that literally, I'm glad I'm not a smoker because the car would ignite. It would just explode like a movie right now. But like, we get to those times when life just happens, right? And it can be hard when life happens. I mean, sometimes your vehicle's not working. Sometimes you left 8 pounds of meat inside of it, you know, but sometimes it's your health, sometimes it's your finances. And you know, in those times when life just gets really hard, there's a common emotion that so many of us feel. And the emotion that we're talking about is this word right here, discontent. Discontent. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. We're going to, over the next couple of weeks, take each kind of emotion, common ones that we feel very, very often. Things like anger, things like grief, things like envy, things like anxiety. And we're going to talk about those emotions because although you may think that they're just emotions inside of you, they're actually emotions that are on the inside, but they are very visible on the outside. And they affect our relationships. And that's what this series is all about, this inside out. We're talking about these inside emotions and how people experience them on the outside. Because we think we have a good poker face. But truthfully, honestly, we don't. People see on the outside what is going on the inside of you. And you may think to yourself, why are we talking about emotions in church? What kind of TED talk is this? Well, it's very important to the gospel. It's very important because here's the thing. When Jesus was on this earth, he said, man, this is the most important thing. This is priority in your life. It's loving God and loving others. We are to love God and love others. These are the most important relationships, our relationship with others and our relationship with God. And so the thing is that our emotions so many times rub up against other people, and they either can help or they can hinder our ability to love God and love others. And so kind of the vision statement for this series, what we're trying to do is I believe that if we become more aware of what we look like on the outside, we can go to work on what's happening on the inside. So the way that we're trying to do this or bring this about is we are asking a question. It's the question I talked about in my prayer. I told you, go out this week, ask three people this question. What's it like to be on the other side of me? And many of you, again, you did this week. You had wonderful conversations. Last night, I went out with a group of friends that were from church, and we went and listened to our friend Buddy play music and stuff, and Kit and I stepped outside of the bar and had a conversation outside, and it was the most manliest boo-hoo session that two men with beards have ever had. And I mean, many of you have had these conversations with different people, and they've been deep, and they've been honest, and they've been good, and that's wonderful. And for those of you who haven't done this yet, I want to encourage you to do this. And I've also heard this, and I want to say this disclaimer. I didn't know this would happen, but I've heard this a lot this week too. Some of you have said, I don't have three people to ask. And I want to tell you that if you don't have three people to ask, that's a separate problem that you need to go to work on. Because if you don't have anybody outside your family, if you don't have anybody outside your spouse, that's a whole different problem. And you need to work on that because even that will tell you something about you. But this question is important. You have to ask this question. Because here's the thing. I said this last week and I'll say it again. If you don't ask this question, you will be the only person who doesn't know what it's like to be on the other side of you. It's been amazing. One of the most fascinating things. I didn't know how this would go, okay? But one of the most fascinating things that I heard this week is somebody told me, you know, I asked you and another person what it's like to be on the other side of me. I don't even know the other person. Totally different context. And he said, you both said the same thing about me. So she sees it at work and you see it at church and you see it as my friend. And you both said the same thing. And they said, I didn't realize it was that obvious. But see, that's the thing. You think you have a good poker face. You think you're fooling everybody. You think people don't know how anxious I am. People don't know how discontent I am. People don't know how angry I am. But we do. We've known. The only person that didn't know was you. And so you owe it to yourself to ask this question. But today we are going to talk specifically about discontent and the emotion of discontent and what it looks like on the outside and what is, let's say, the antidote for that emotion. If you don't know what discontent is, a discontent, by definition, is a lack of satisfaction with your situation. A lack of satisfaction with your situation. And some of you, that speaks to your core, doesn't it? Because you are discontent right now. You don't like your situation. If I asked you if you are satisfied, you'd say, not really. It could be with your job. It could be with your career. That you feel like you've hit a ceiling. You feel like you're not valued. You feel like it's not purposeful. You feel like every single day you're not getting anything out of this. You are discontent with your job or the salary or just what it brings into your life. And you go home feeling that discontent. And guess what? That discontent carries with you everywhere you go. Or maybe it's your health. maybe you're just discontent with how you feel and you can't do the things that you once were able to do, and you're trying to get your health back, you're trying to feel better, you want to be off of these meds, or you want answers and they can't give you answers, and you're waiting on test results, and inside of you, you're just discontent. Or maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a friendship. Maybe it's a marriage. Maybe it's a relation with your parents or a sister or a brother or a cousin or a grandmother. You're discontent with the situation and how the relationship is going right now, and you're not satisfied. And here's the thing. When you feel that way, whether it's your finances, your health, a relationship, your job, your home, your car, whatever the situation is, when you're discontent on the inside, it is experienced on the outside. See, here's the thing. Your discontent never remains private. It affects other people too. We're visibly able to see it on the outside. And here's what it may look like. A lot of times it's in your face. Your face shows that you're discontent. Some of you have that face that just looks like you're ticked off, you know? Yeah, you're laughing. No elbows, okay, for the next like 5 minutes, all right? But you ever just sit with somebody and this is how they look? And you're like, what's wrong with your face? And they're like, nothing. Okay, now what's wrong with your face and your tone, okay? You know, like, I can read it on you. Like, you just, it's that downcast, brow down, facial expression, you know, kind of thing. It's also in your body language. Your body language. Where, you know, anybody just see anybody stand there like this? Yeah, put your hands, put your arms down. Adam was like, I was discontent with this sermon. Oops, he caught me. All right, yeah, nobody's falling around. But, you know, this is just like kind of thing right here, you know. Or, you know, when I get discontent, I huff, you know. I breathe like I'm letting off like a pressure valve kind of thing, you know. You ever hear people do that? We're like, you know, because you just realize you're not breathing, right? And so you're being kind of huffy, and your body language is kind of telling that. Or you're just kind of quiet, you know, you're kind of off by yourself. And then it's also your behavior. Your behavior shows everybody that you're discontent. You know, guys are really bad about this. Guys, you're a bunch of pouters is what you do, you know? Yeah. Go ahead and elbow him. It's okay, all right? But guys pout a little bit where they sit there and they're not happy and they're discontent. They're like, what's going on? You want to talk about this? No, I don't want to talk about anything. I'm fine. I'm just hungry. I just want to go home. I just want to do this, right? Blah, blah, blah. And they got this body language and they're just kind of pouty because they're, you know, they're discontent about something. There's something they want that they can't have. So they're a little pouty. Some of you, you're discontent, and what it comes off as is it looks like you just don't want to be around anybody. Or even sometimes in your behavior, what discontent looks like is you go off on people. You tear people down. You're so discontent inside of you. You're so hurt and discontent and unsatisfied that you lash out at people that you're discontent with. Sometimes you lash out at people that have nothing to do even with the situation. And you tear them down and you blame them and you hurt them. And that's not right. And that's not good. And to others, the way that discontent looks, honestly, sometimes when you're walking around discontent, what other people believe is that you don't want to be their friend, or that you're not approachable, because they see you over there being looking all discontent and the body language and the face and everything else and the quietness. And they go, yeah, I'm just going to leave them alone today because they don't look approachable. They don't look like they want to be friends today. I feel like if I went and asked them how they were, they're either going to lie to me or they're going to go off about something. And I don't really want to do that today. See, you may have experienced that. You may be experiencing that right now. Actually, somebody might have told you that this week when they asked you the question, what's it like to be on the other side of me? And they said, I look at you and you just look so unhappy. You look discontent. And what discontent looks like so many times is negativity and being pessimistic and just kind of, right? And here's the thing about discontent. Discontent doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't. See, that's the weird thing about discontent, is it just doesn't happen overnight. It's like boiling water, right? I mean, you can look at it and it doesn't look hot, right? It's looked the same for the last 15 minutes. And then all of a sudden you see the bubbles and then you realize, and that's what discontent looks like, is so many times you don't realize that you're discontent. You don't know that you're discontent until one day you do. But the truth is it just, it's not just one event. It's not just one conversation. It's not just one thing. It's been happening over time. And sometimes we didn't even see it happening, or we didn't see it coming. And when we feel that, man, we don't like it. Nobody likes to be discontent. And we want to try to fix it, right? And so when we realize, oh, we have a problem. I'm discontent. I'm dissatisfied. We have an issue here and we need to fix it. So many times this is what we say internally, or this is even what we say out loud. We say, oh, I just want to figure this out. Right? Oh, I just want to figure out. I just want everything to be as it should be. I just want it to work. And many times when we realize that we're discontent and there's a problem, we rush to fix it. And we're like, okay, let's do this right now. Come on, let's fix it. Let's try to do this. And here's the thing, is that when we get into fix it mode, when we want to fix it and we want to have conversations and we want to figure it out and we want to create plans and stuff, we so quickly want to try to fix the thing that we're dissatisfied. The truth is, and this is hard, but you know this, the pursuit to fix and make everything perfect is exhausting and at times impossible. When it comes to your career and being discontent, it's not going to be fixed just like that. It's not going to be one meeting. It's not going to be one phone call or one email. It may not even be the next job, right? And when it comes to relationships, the truth is that when it comes to relationships, sometimes what's broken can't be fixed. Sometimes because of what's happened or because of whatever the circumstances may be, it just can't be. Sometimes having things perfect in your finances or in your health, there's no guarantee. And so I'm not telling you not to try, but you know this already. The pursuit to fix and make everything perfect, it is exhausting. And it takes time. And it takes work. But we have to know that at times, it is impossible. And the truth is that the way things are, they might be this way for a while. They may even be this way permanently. And see, this is important because when we're discontent, the emotion of discontent and how it's experienced by other people, how it's seen by other people, your discontent is affecting your ability to love God and to love others. It's affecting your environment. It's affecting your work. It's affecting your career. It's affecting how you live your life. And I don't think any of us want that. I know you don't want that. And I know you don't want to feel discontent in your heart. And I know you don't like the way that other people experience it and the way that other people see it. So what do we do? How can we go to work on it? Well, I think that the answer is found in a letter that Paul wrote. And actually, part of this letter we read just previously, just a few weeks ago. But there's kind of a secret that we haven't covered in this letter that I believe is kind of the antidote or the answer to discontent. And so Paul, he writes this letter to Philippi, church in Philippi that he helped plant. And for context, you need to know that Paul at the time, like many times, he's in jail. It's about AD 62. We believe that he was either in jail in a Roman prison or in a prison in Ephesus. And he writes this letter encouraging people and letting them know that although the circumstances look as if he should be discontent, he's actually not. And this is what he says in your New Testament in Philippians. He says, I'm not saying this because I'm in need, for I've learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. So he says, I've discovered the secret of life. I can be content in any situation, whether I'm in need or I'm not, whether I'm good or whether I'm bad. And then this is what he says next. He says, I've learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. This is what Paul is trying to say. Paul felt content despite his situation of discontent. Now, that's an amazing thing right there. I mean, if somebody was selling this or had a book on this or a podcast on this and said, hey, so here's the cool thing. When the situation is grim and I'm discontent, I have found a way to be content. I have found a way to fight that emotion. And this is what Paul says he's discovered. And we've read this verse before. You've probably heard this verse in church. You may have read it yourself and thought, that's great. That's awesome. But what is the thing that he did? What is the thing that he found that helped him be content on the inside, on the outside, when his life and his world and his relationships or whatever it may be were so discontent? And I think that the answer is found just a few verses later, but it's so often missed. But I want to share it with you this morning. He says this. He says, do not be anxious about anything. For in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. He says, hey, I know the situation is grim. I know the situation is bad. I know things aren't how they should be. But don't be anxious about it. And we're going to talk about anxiety in this series. But he says, do not be anxious. But in every situation, whether it's good or bad, as it should be or as it shouldn't be, whatever the situation may be, don't be anxious about it. Do not be discontent. And there's a word there that's very, very important. He says, but with thanksgiving, with thankfulness, with, we could say, gratitude, present your requests to God. See, this is what I think Paul figured out that we miss so many times, is that the secret to being content when things are discontent is gratitude. Now, you probably hear that and go, oh, geez, no, that's a bunch of baloney, right? I mean, you might hear that and you might go, yeah. I've had this conversation with my mother many, many times, you know, where I've been on the phone with my mom and I've been discontent and I've been telling her about everything that's wrong. And she said, honey, you just need to be thankful. Things could always be worse. You know what I mean? Like that kind of attitude, you know, of gratitude, like, you know, it's not the worst day you've ever had. It's just the worst day you've ever had so far. Okay, right? Like, you know, and maybe they even tell you about all, you know, your cousins and aunts and how bad their life is, you know, and then, you know, it could be worse. You could be in jail. You could be dead. You know, I mean, they tell you and you're like, great. Yeah, that's really helpful. You know, sometimes we hear that word gratitude and that's what we think of, because here's the thing. I think our culture doesn't understand gratitude. I think when we think in our culture, gratitude, we think positivity and good vibes, right? You just look on the upside and just kind of get over it. Like, what, you don't need to be sad. Just throw on some good music and, you know, pick yourself up and just be positive. Just be happy. Just be content. But that's not what real gratitude is. That's definitely not Christ-centered gratitude. Because Christ-centered gratitude is a whole different bag. And that's what Paul's talking about. That's what Paul found. See, real gratitude, gratitude is when I recognize and receive the good God's given me. When you get a gift, okay, when you get a gift for your birthday or Christmas or whatever it is, or somebody surprises you with it. I got surprised with zucchini bread this morning. I've greatly appreciated it, right? You look at it and you look at the gift, you take it in. You understand why it was given to you, and many times is it a good gift? But then once you recognize the thing you've been given, the gift, you thank the gift giver, right? You thank them for bringing it to you or buying it for you or making it for you or finding it for you. So you honor the gift and you're thankful for the gift, and then you thank the gift giver. And that is what Paul recognize. Paul recognizes, although things are the way they are, even though this is not a good situation, even though I'm completely dissatisfied with what I'm going through and all of these crises and these situations that I have to deal with, although things are bad, I am choosing to recognize the good things that God has put in my life, and I am choosing to thank the person who gave them to me, my Father in heaven, who loves me so, so much. That is what real gratitude is. That was the secret to Paul's dealing with discontent in his heart. And here's the great thing about that. See, this is different than our culture's version of gratitude of just, you know, just have good vibes and choose to be positive and stuff. This kind of gratitude is different, because do you know what this kind of gratitude allows us to do? It allows us to be honest and real and genuine. Because that kind of gratitude gives us permission to say, life's not good right now, but God is still good. Yeah, I love the across the crowd, right? Gratitude, this kind of Christ-centered gratitude, it gives us permission to say, life's not good right now, but God is still good. Because can we all be honest for a minute? Life sometimes isn't good. It's not. Your situation at work, it's not good. Your health, it's not good. That relationship, it's not good. Your financial situation, the thing with your car and the beef in the back, it's not good. There ain't no amount of positivity that can make that odor go away, right? It's bad. And sometimes people try to tell you to mask it. People try to tell you to just deal with it. You know, deal with your emotions. Go get your emotions in check. You need to calm down. You need to get yourself in order. But that's lying to yourself, isn't it? Isn't that just you filtering your emotions or hiding them? That's not good. It's not good for you. But this kind of gratitude allows you to deal with those emotions head on and admit you're right. Things aren't good right now. Things aren't good right now. But you know what? God is still good. Because in the midst of the crap that I'm dealing with, I can know that God has still put good things in my life. God has still provided. God has still put good people in my life. God has still given me good opportunities. And he's still good. And I can look at all the good gifts that God has given me and know and have faith that he will still work things out for my good despite the bad things that are happening. See, here's the thing. Gratitude, this kind of gratitude, it gives us hope when we think all hope is lost. Because so often when we are discontent and things are bad and we don't know how things are going to work out and we start to go to work and we start to try to fix it and we start to try to figure it out and we try to make things perfect, we start to spiral. We start to get flustered. We start to get angry and all kinds of other emotions start to get there. But gratitude reminds us that God is still good and that God still has us, and it gives us hope when things start to feel hopeless. When we start to figure out that maybe, just maybe, this can't get fixed. And maybe, just maybe, this is not going to go away quickly. Gratitude still gives us hope because we know that no matter what happens and no matter how long this lasts, God is good and God is with me. Now, here's the thing about that. You may hear that, and in your context right now, if you are discontent, you're probably thinking to yourself, or you're going to think tomorrow, you're going to go, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be grateful when I'm discontent. It is so hard to switch that in your brain, to be grateful when you are feeling discontent, when your situation is discontent. And I understand that, and I realize that, and that's going to be a real struggle internally for you. But here's the thing that I know you want. In the deepest part of your soul, what you want to experience on the inside and what you want people to see on the outside is this emotion. Right here. Peace. Isn't it true that what you want in here is peace? Isn't it true that what you wish other people saw was peace? Well, here's the thing. This is what Paul says. He says, I've learned this secret of being content. And what I've chosen to do is to be, I'm not anxious about anything because I have thanksgiving in my heart. I've chosen to be grateful, and I've taken all of this stuff to God, and I've chosen to be grateful, and I've recognized the good gifts he's given me and the good things he's done for me. And I've recognized who he is as a gift giver and that he has me. And Paul says in the very next verse, he says, and because I've done this, you know what I've experienced? And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, which transcends all situations, which transcends any kind of junk that I go through in life or anything that I experience, it will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. See, here's the thing. Things are the way they are, and things happen in life. But when we have thanksgiving in our heart, when we practice gratitude, the peace of God covers all of that. The peace of God guards our hearts and guards our minds. There's a line that I came up with years ago, and I don't think of too many one-liners by myself, but I thought this one was pretty good. But a couple years ago, I wrote this line, and I started to share it in my messages. It's this right here. It's not okay, but I'm okay. It's not okay. What you're going through right now, that dissatisfaction, that discontent, what's going on in your finances, in your health, in your relationships, whatever it may be, you don't need to just filter it. You don't need to just mask it. You don't need to just throw it in a closet, okay? You don't need to even just deal with it by yourself. You're right. It's not okay. But you are okay. You are okay because of who has you, because of who loves you, and because of who cares for you. And you know what? Things are not okay, but you are stronger than these things you are up against. You are stronger and you are more than that situation. You are a fighter. You are a warrior. You are brave. And you have everything in you that God has given you to fight through this and to make it through it. And you know what? It will get better. And if it doesn't, you will still be okay. Because I know who you are and I know the one who has you. It is not okay. But you are going to be okay. When you know that in your heart, when you believe that, when you are able to go and find the good that God has put in your life and recognize the good gift giver that He is, things change. You experience peace, not just on the inside, but people see it on the outside. See, here's the thing. When I know God is good on the inside, peace is what is seen on the outside. And you've seen this before. You've seen this in people. You've seen people go through situations where they should be discontent. They should be crying in a corner. But you see resilience. You see bravery. You see steadfastness. You don't see a downcast face. You see somebody who's determined and who's brave. And you look at them and you go, I don't understand. Your situation is very discontent. But when I look at you, you look like you're somehow holding yourself together. I don't see any tears. I don't see any fear. I don't see any anxiety. I don't see you falling apart. What is happening? And what is happening is that the peace of God is transcending all of the situation that you're up against. That's what it looks like when somebody's filled with the Spirit. That's what it looks like when somebody has made the decision to practice gratitude and to rely on the Father and to know that He is good. When I was in college, I took a class called Personal Development of a Minister. And the class had a lot of little different assignments, but there was one main assignment that was 90% of your grade. You had to write a paper during that semester, and you had to write a one-page paper for each year that you were alive. And you had to go through each year of your life, and you had to go and find where God was good in that year and what God did for you, how God blessed you, how God showed up for each year of your life. And so however long however old you were, that's how long your paper had to be, and you had to turn that in. So I was 21 at the time. So I had to write this 21-page paper for each year of my life and find God in each year, which is really hard. You know, honestly, when I first heard it, I was like, this is going to be really tough. You know, you start year one, I came out, you know? Year two, mama dropped me, but I'm okay. You know, I mean, I was just going like, man, like, you know, I could point to God like that one time when I was 12 or that one time when I was 16, but I was like, ugh, you know? But you know what happened was I went and I talked to my parents and I talked to people who had known me for a long time. And I talked about certain seasons and chapters of my life. And I started to find God. I learned that when I was born, I, of course, came out with my mouth open and swallowed fluid. And I had to be monitored for a long time. And I had all kinds of machines on me and different things. And I made it through that. I learned a story from my mother when I was 4 years old. I had a severe speech impediment where I would stutter and stutter and stutter. And one day at a restaurant, it got so bad that I broke down in tears because I wanted to communicate something to my mother and I couldn't get it out without the stutter, and I couldn't communicate with my mother, and I just started to cry, and she took me into a bathroom and she prayed over me, and I never stuttered again. I found out about abuse that had happened in my family, that I was spared from, that I was protected from, things that I could have experienced that I never had to because of God's grace over me. And I was spared from that abuse that could have been me. I started to connect the dots, and the paper just started to grow and grow and grow. And at the end of the semester, I handed over a 50-page paper to my professor of how good God was in my 21 years of living. And still to this day, every year at New Year's, I add to that paper. That paper is over 100 pages now. And one day, when I die, I will give it to my kids. And there's a cover letter at the top of that paper. And it says, "This is Dad's life. I just want you to know how good my life was and how good God was in it. I want my kids to know that." And in that paper, in that story of my life, many of you are in it too. Stories of you and experiences with you. Because you are part of the good in my life that God has given me. And I am so, so incredibly thankful for all of you. And I want you to experience that. And I want you to have that on the inside of you. And I want people to experience that on the outside of you. So here's the good news. I got homework for you this week. And the good news is it's not going to be a paper, okay? Because some of y'all are old as dirt. Anyway, no, I'm just kidding. But here's what I do want you to do. Here's your homework for this week. Number one, if you haven't gone and asked the question, I want you to go ask the question. But here's the first thing. I want you to make a gratitude list. I want you to sit down in your notes app, on your phone, on your computer, in your journal, whatever it may be. And I want you to write down what you're grateful for. And I don't want you to just write your house or your car or that kind of stuff. I want you to really, really sit down and recognize the good that God has given you. I want you to see the good gifts that God has put in your life. More than just material things, but the deep stuff, the good stuff. And then here's what I want you to do. I want you to send that to three people. I want you to send that to three people. And here's the thing, especially if somebody is on that list, if you can think of a relationship or somebody that you are specifically grateful for, and it might even be the same three people that you asked this question to this week, and it may even be your spouse. I want you to sit down with them or text them or call them and say, "Hey, I just want you to know this week I sat down this week and I'm really trying to find the good gifts that God has given me. And I want you to know you are one of them. And I see you, and I appreciate you, and I don't deserve it, but you are good. And I'm so thankful for you." And then the third thing I want you to do is I want you to thank God. Because here's the thing, He is the gift giver. There is nothing good that you have done on your own. You have put in the effort. You have put in the work. You have shown up. Absolutely. You've done your due diligence and you were disciplined. But the truth is that without God, none of that would be possible. And He's the gift giver. And He deserves our praise. I don't know about you, but man, when I show up for worship, it ain't about singing three songs to get to the sermon. This is my opportunity to thank the gift giver. This is my opportunity to look up and go, wow, I'm so incredibly grateful. It's your amazing grace that I understand and I see now. Without it, I would be lost. So thank you. Thank you, Father. I mean, if that's not motivation to show up every Sunday just for the opportunity to do that, then I don't know what is. But you need to thank him and you need to honor him because he is so, so good. And you know what? This morning we get to baptize 4 more people. And these stories, each one of them is so specifically special to me. And it's so, so special to get to share it with Pastor Ashley. Because half of these, when I asked the people, who do you want to baptize you? They said, Pastor Ashley. Because she has spoken life into their life. This is a celebration. It's good. And we got to baptize the Boyer kids last week. And we have these 4 stories today. And it's just so incredibly amazing. And we thank God for it. Because it's all about him. It all comes from him. So will you pray with me this morning before we begin? Father God. God, I am so thankful for you. I am thankful for the good that you've put in my life. I'm thankful for the people you've put in my life. I'm thankful for who you created me to be. And how you've been there for me. In the lows and the highs. Father God, this morning, we thank you. You're good. We love you. God, help us when we are discontent to focus on the good. Help us when we are discontent to not get lost, to not try to fix everything, but to focus on you. And may the peace that you offer transcend all other discontent. May it transcend all understanding.